La'olam yargiz adam yetzer tov yetzer hara. And the Gemara was interpreting this pasuk about rigzu v'al tefto. And the pasuk contains this phrase, imru b'levavchem. So we mentioned that this pasuk was central to a machlokas together with these drashos, the whole idea that there's a progression of what you should do in order to fight the Yetzer Hara. This was invoked as part of a fight with the Musar movement. And the argument was made that you see the Yazka Yom HaMitzva is apparently the last step, so therefore maybe that's the most effective. So the proponents of the Musar movement argued that that shows that that's what should be done. The very gloomy introspection, the very intense hispainness of remembering your mortality is apparently the most effective. And the response to that was, from Volozhin, from Chaim Brisker, was that, no, that's like saying, okay, go right to surgery. That's only for those who are sick. For those who are healthy, we can suffice with the first step, and Talmud Torah is sufficient. And I mentioned the possibility that if we focus on the language of the Pasuk, it's Imru B'Levavchem, so it's not necessarily just any Talmud Torah that's sufficient, but perhaps a specific type, a type that speaks to the heart. So that is also relevant, because what exactly the Pasuk means when it says Imru B'Levavchem also is invoked in another discussion. There is a Machlokas, a Shulchan Aruch in the Gra, possibly about the question of whether there is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah when one is only thinking about it. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is that one who is Maharher B'Divrei Torah doesn't make a bracha. If he's writing Divrei Torah, however, he does. And the Vilna Gaon disagrees, and the Vilna Gaon says there's a key in mitzvah also in thinking in Torah. As the Pasuk indicates, V'Higisa B'Yom V'Laila. Sounds like it means meditating in Torah is sufficient to fulfill a mitzvah. So it is a major discussion. First of all, is the Shulchan Aruch really saying that there's no Kiyum Mitzvah in Machshava? And if so, why is Ksiva different? So there are many suggestions that the Iker Talmud Torah is perhaps that which is communicated to others, especially the Gemara Darshan's Vishinantim Luvanecha. It's specifically that which is taught, that which is conveyed. So that which is only internal is not going to be at least the ideal format. There is maybe a indication here about how brachos are defined. It's not necessarily that any kiyum mitzvah of a certain mitzvah itself always is eligible for bracha. Sometimes in order to have a format of a mitzvah that gets the bracha, it has to be at least a certain level of that mitzvah. So it could be that, yes, there's a kiyum mitzvah of Talmud Torah of Behir Hur, but maybe it needs to reach a certain level of that mitzvah in order to get the bracha. So there are many interpretations of what the Shulchan Aruch means, and the Marsham and others have discussions based on this language of Imru B'Levavchem. Does that tell us anything about whether there is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah Behir Hur? And one suggestion, this discussion, the Sefer Sharam Mitzvayana B'Halacha, which is maybe more well-known as a commentary on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, but also is the Sefer of Ha'aras on Shas too. And he mentions this possibility that it could be that the intention in the Pasuk is to say, speak to your heart in the way you learn, not necessarily learn in your heart, and therefore maybe it's not necessarily a raya to how you fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Hi.
Couldn't we say that Imru B'Levavchem is somewhat parallel to Avodah Shebelev, that it does need to be vocalized?
So, Avodah, it's interesting if that's what that means. You're saying Avodah Shebelev is a raya that tefillah
is your tefillah, and we know that tefillah has to be vocalized.
But not necessarily from there.
Right, but could we make a parallel that if Avodah Shebelev is tefillah and we know that tefillah has to be vocalized, then Imru B'Levavchem could be parallel to that?
It's interesting that you mention that, because I would think the opposite point, because I don't know if that's a proof that because it has to be vocalized. The fact that tefillah needs to be vocalized doesn't come from there specifically. And we actually made the opposite point when we left off last week, because we were synergizing a little bit to Zachar. If you recall that the Gemara had a Havamina in Megillah, that one of the few things that the Gemara does spell out about the nature of the obligation of Zachar, we mentioned that so much of what we do with Zachar is really what develops later, but the Gemara does bring up the point that there needs to be a verbalization for Zachar, and the Gemara says, Yachol, believe, you could have thought that it's enough to think about it, Tamud Lomer Al Tishkach, that somehow from Al Tishkach we know that it's not enough, believe. So believe there means not to be verbalized. So that's a little bit of a indication here also. That's one of the ways to read believe, that it's something done mentally. So that's an interesting thought. And by the way, you're just reminding me before we go further, before we go on to another topic, just to also mention another synergy between this past week's Parsha and our recently mudim here in the Masechta. I just want to call your attention to a comment that Rabbeinu Yonah here in this parak, a sugi we did relatively recently, that talks about this past week's Parsha, just so you should be aware. It's a good marmokom from this parak. So you turn to Rabbeinu Yonah for a second, Daf Aleph Amud Beis. So we talked about Ben Hashmashos and Sfeikos, if you recall. So the whole idea that Ben Hashmashos is a suffix, and the notion of the twilight zone, we talked about a little bit. So there is a important comment of Rabbeinu Yonah over here. So in the original formatting of the Dape Harif, it is the bottom of Aleph Amud Beis, but Dape Harif. And he has a comment here about this past week's Parsha. And he talks about the idea that regarding Ben Hashmashos, that you have to be more machmir on the time of Safek, and not do malacha until Shabbos is totally out. And he has a comment here, Zehu ikar hayira, lizoher mehasfekos, v'shlo la'asos ha-mitzvos al-derech ha-hergel, she'onesh ha-safek yosu meha-vadai. That you have to be even more worried about safek even than vadai. V'chei motzinu shal ha-vadai mevichatos. And we see that when you do an avera that you're sure about, so you bring a chatos, and then he goes through a whole cheshbon about how much exactly a chatas costs. And if you're not sure you did an avera, so you bring an ashram tole. That's one of the things that we read about this past week. And if you calculate the whole rate, it comes out that an ashram tole is actually going to cost you more than a chatas. So he goes on to say, "V'hatamba ze alama hechmiru ala safik yosem avadai." Amr Mari Harav Shmipnei Shal Avadai Mesim Adam Hacheta Libo V'Doeg U'Mescharet Alav V'Chozer B'Tshuva Shlema. That a person who knows that he did an avera, he's thinking about it all the time, and he's worried about it, and he regrets it, and he does complete tshuva. Aval Hasafek Osasvaros. If a person is not sure they did an avera, so then he rationalizes. Omer Osa Chaticha Shachalti. This piece of meat that I ate, ulai ha'islamu teres, maybe it was mutter. V'lo yashu salibo lashuv, and he's not going to set his mind to do tshuva. V'lo zeh hichmiru bo yoser, and therefore he sets his mind to it. Therefore, the Torah was more machmir. And the Balei Musar point out, Simcha Zosel Broi Duchavrin has about this in a state for some derech in Vayikra, that you see that a part of the consideration in the kapara process is the possibility and the likelihood of tshuva. So, for example, something else that comes up in Masechet Brachos, and the little synergy between Brachos and Daf Yomi in a few weeks, and also next year's Masechet, they're both Bav Metzia. So, both in Brachos and Bav Metzia is the sugya of Habanas Pnei Chaver Baravim. And the Gemara has this tremendous chumra regarding halbanus b'nei chaver b'ravim, that one who embarrasses someone in public is worse than somebody who commits adultery. And the Gemara says that he has no chelek in olam haba, or he's compared to a murderer. He has no chelek in olam haba. So there, Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva writes that it's actually a worse onesh than the murderer. And he explains the reasoning along a similar fashion. He says that a murderer, he knows that what he did was egregious. So he's going to be regretful and he's going to repent for what he did. But somebody who embarrasses people in public, it's of comparable severity, but he's not going to do tshuva for it because he's not going to appreciate that it's a bad kind of severity, and therefore the onesh is going to end up being more severe. Okay, so that's just going back to that sugya from previously, just because of the parsha synergy. Okay, so now to go back to daf A, so the Gemara has some agadatas here, which you'll see inside if you haven't yet, but just to skip around about it a little bit. So the Gemara talks about Yisurin and the impact of Yisurin, because the Gemara says that if you say Kriya Shema Amita, so that will protect you from Yisurin. And that's a powerful thing. And if you're involved in Torah, that will protect you from Yisurin. And talking about Torah here, the Gemara has a line. The middle of Hayyamar Aleph, Amar Zeru Visemar of Chanina, Bar Papa, Bo Re'ei Shlo Kemidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midas Basa V'dam, Midas Basa V'dam Adam Mocher Chefet L'Chavero. So normally, human beings, God's not like human beings, because human beings, a person sells something to his friend, Mocher Otsev V'Lokeach Samech. The seller is sad, and the buyer is happy. Abal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eino King. Dosim lahem Torah liYisrael v'sameach. He gives a Torah to the Jews, and he's happy. Shenamar ki lechach tov nasati lachem terasi al tazov. So, what does that mean? Right? Don't we normally assume that transactions are supposed to be mutually beneficial?
That doesn't mean that everyone necessarily wants to need to go through them.
Okay.
Just because that I benefit from getting paid for giving you an item or a service doesn't mean I wanted to give you that item or service necessarily.
True. So expand on that, yeah, Eric.
Isn't that Daf B's on Avodah Zara talks about like no one, like all people only do business because they have to. No one does because they want to.
Okay, not no one, but yeah.
All right, that's what's the indication of the Gemara.
I mean, usually if you sell something like knowingly and willingly, there's still that, like, a part of you like, oh, like I lost it, like I lost this item. But Hashem, it's like it's the opposite. It's not that oh, I lost the item; it's that Nishal has it, and I become happy because of it.
Yeah, so that's what it sounds like the Gemara is getting at. That there is a Gemara in Bava Basra, which the sugya of Tluhu Vizavin, and I think we spoke about this a little bit in Gittin, where it comes up in that context a little bit, where the Gemara tries to figure out what the status is of somebody who is compelled to sell something. So even though if you force someone to sell something against their will, it's a good possibility that's against the Aseret HaDibros, it's probably an Issur D'Oraisa, that's probably Lo Sachmod. It's Machlokas in the Gemara in Bava Basra again, actually, whether it's called Lo Sachmod if you pay for it, but possibly, very likely that it is Lo Sachmod if you force someone to sell something to you, even if you pay for it. So it's not that it's okay to do that, but it's still possibly the case, likely the case, that Zvini Zvini, that the sale is still effective. So the question is, why is the sale effective if somebody sells something when he didn't want to? So here, because he is getting paid, he is getting the proper value for it. So the Gemara mentions as a partial explanation to that point that we don't know that it's fundamentally different than any other sale, along the lines of what you've been saying, that the assumption is that, yes, every sale involves a seller parting with something that he owns and getting compensated. And maybe if in a perfect world, he would never do that, that he's doing it only because of economic pressure. And there is some degree of unwillingness involved in every sale, which opens up all kinds of interesting philosophical questions, because the question of to what extent is someone doing something freely because he is pressured economically, and the fact that he chooses to do that because he needs the money, so does that mean it's not called free will? That has interesting moral implications, has implications in the context of Gittin, has implications all over the place. So it sounds like that's what the Gemara is talking about here, that the seller, he's selling something, but he said that he has to sell it, and God's not that way. He's very happy that he gives the Torah to the Jewish people, and there's no element of that at all. Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, who we'll mention a few times probably, and Rav Yonasan Eibshitz was a great Gaon who wrote many Svarim, and more well known for his commentaries to Yerudei and Choshen Mishpat, and a number of commentaries to the Torah, and the Sefer Drashos called the Aris Dvash, but there's also a manuscript on Brachos that was published a few years ago, the Chidushir Ben Yehonasan on Brachos. So there, he is quoted as saying that a little bit of a different shot on this, that he thinks that the idea of the seller being sad, it's talking about somebody who sold on credit. So he's worried that he won't get paid back. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not worried about that, because it means that even when the Jews are not yet worthy, but he has faith, so to speak, kaviyachol, that the Jews will ultimately be worthy, and therefore he's not saddened by the fact that the Jews have not yet earned the Torah, which is a very inspiring idea on a whole different level.
Is that also kind of saying that the Torah was given on credit, almost?
Yeah, which is an idea that has other implications and other sources to it. But especially if we also understand that we just finished Purim, right? The idea that the Torah was kind of forced upon us, we didn't fully accept it willingly, and only in the aftermath of Purim did we reaffirm Kimu v'Kiblu. So that also kind of speaks to that idea on some level. So the next line here, the Gemara says that the Gemara is picking up on this point of Yisurin, which the Gemara talks about. So here it says, Amarava Visema Rivchista Imroa Adam Shi Yisurin Bain Alav Yfashvesh Bemasav. Shinamar Nachbashadar Chenuf Nachkar. If somebody sees that he's having Chalila a hard time with things, he should investigate his actions and he should see what he comes up lacking. If he looked through everything and he didn't find anything, Yitle Bevitl Torah. Shenamar Ashri Hagever Sherti Yisranu Kami Tarasavat Mondenu. So if he went through everything and he can't find anything wrong, then he should assume it's Bevitl Torah. So the Bali Musar asked about this, that sounds strange. It sounds like you're supposed to do a spiritual auditing and see what you're doing wrong. And if you can't find anything, then you blame it on Bittul Torah. But Bittul Torah is an Avera. So why would you not have found that the first time around? So the way they explain is that Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov V'lo Yechta, that there's nobody who is perfect. So if you actually look through your meisim and you can't find anything, so then the only possible explanation to that is that you just don't know enough, because you're not really perfect. So therefore the only way you could come out perfect is just because you're ignorant and you're not aware that you're doing things wrong. So there the conclusion must be that there's Bittul Torah there, that there's insufficient knowledge to be aware of what's missing. So that's a interesting point. It's also indicative of the fact, this is a point that Rabbi Tversky makes often, that this idea of pishpush b'maisen and trying to strive for answers when times are difficult is that it's not that we're necessarily assuming there's one right answer. And the way he puts it is, if your question is, you know, why did this happen? So any answer you're going to give is probably wrong. If your question is, what should I do in light of what happened? So then any answer you're going to give is probably right. So whenever you look for what you could be doing better, so then that's mimela, the right answer. And if a person comes up with nothing, so then if he really thinks he's perfect, it's very unlikely. But nonetheless, the Gemara does still have another possibility here. In Tala v'loy matza, if you can't find anything, v'yadua shi'asur in shalabahim. So then, if there's literally nothing, so then it must be asur in shalabah. But apparently, it is possible for a person to suffer, and there isn't anything to blame it on, and that's called yasur in shalabah. So what does that mean, yasur in shalabah? So Rashi explains here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu miyasu ba'olam hazeh b'lo yishum avam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is putting somebody through experiences in this world without any avera, kedei laharbo schara ba'olam hazeh yaisu mechdei schiyosef, so that he should have greater reward in the next world, even more than he would have earned in this world. So there's a drasha about this in the drasha of Sar Tzvi. The Sefer Eretz Tzvi is the Shuvas of the Kadosh Baruch Hu Rav, who we've mentioned in the past. He has a letter in the back of the Sefer to one of his Yedidim, where he discusses this. He says, what exactly does this mean? He says, so how do you measure Schar? He says, so what's the idea that you could have had 1 kilo of Schar in the next world that you're going to get now because of the kilo of suffering you're going to give up and this you're going to take on in this world? So if it's just equal, that doesn't sound like a good deal. So mimela, it's got to be more. So it's got to be that you'll take on 1 kilo of suffering in this world to get 2 kilos of schar in the next world. But then why can't you just cancel it out? So get just 1 kilo of schar in the next world and no suffering in this world. Why do you need to get the extra suffering in this world? So he explains that it's about being held to a higher standard, and that we know that in general the whole notion of how we're held to account reflects our standard. And he talks there also about the concept of saying Kaddish on a yard site. So what's the idea of saying Kaddish on a yard site if the assumption is that people are only judged during the first year, and the children say Kaddish for only 11 months, so we shouldn't assume that the parents are being treated like Rishayim. So then why do they keep coming back in the yard site? So it says the idea is that you're hoping actually that the Zchuyas that a person has is rising them, is raising them up to a higher level. But when you're raised up to a higher level, so now you're judged on a higher standard. So you're judged on a higher standard, so now you're revisiting everything that now has to be looked at again based on that higher standard. So now you're hoping for a new kapara to offset everything that comes from that higher standard. So that's what the new kaddish is for. So too here, the point of the Yisur and Shalav is really that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to give you a elevation, but then you need to be judged on that higher standard. So that's what these Yisur and Shalav represent. Which, to make it semi-more rationalist, essentially, means also that the suffering that a person goes through is a purifying experience and a elevating experience, and that it's not necessarily a function of Avera always, but it could have other ways in which it's impacting a person's personality. But that there are different ways in which suffering is productive for a person. Sefer Achinuch writes that the prohibition of nekama, the prohibition of revenge, has to do with the fact that when somebody goes through something, so it's for some kind of a purpose, whether it's an onesh or something else, so if somebody is going to react to whatever is happening by obsessing over the human shliach and saying it's his fault and therefore I have to focus on him and take revenge on him, so whatever the message is going to get lost in that focus on the human shliach, and therefore that's going to be a big mistake. So that's this idea of Yisurin Shel Ahava, and something along those lines. And then in that context, so the Gemara talks about what Yisurin Shel Ahava is, and the Gemara considers that in order to be defined Yisurin Shel Ahava, it says Kol She'ein Ba Bitul Torah. It has to be Yisurin that don't cause one to interrupt learning, to learn less. The Gemara has a possibility Kol She'ein Ba Bitul Tefillah. It can't be called Yisurin Shel Ahava if it results in less Tefillah. Well, then the Gemara considers a possibility that maybe that's not true. So the Rashba has a tshuva in Chelek Aleph. The Rashba has a tshuva that this may be comparable to what the Gemara says in Masechta Sukkah, that if it rains on the first night of Sukkot, and that prevents one from eating in the Sukkah, so that's comparable to a Eved who's trying to bring a bowl of soup to his master, and he ends up just spilling it out. So there is a mushel there. So the Rashba's discussion, what exactly that mushel means, there's two possibilities. But on one level, he says comparable to this, that it seems that Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying he's not interested in your service, or he's not giving you the full ability to serve him. So then that seems hard to reconcile with the picture of Ahava. So that's one opinion of the Gemara, and there's another opinion that it could still be considered Yisurin Shel Ahava, even in that case. And then the Gemara gives an interesting Kal Vachomer here, that Yisurin are beneficial to a person. Kal Vachomer Mishen Va'ayin. Ma Shein Va'ayin Shu'echer Mevar Shel Adam Eved Yetze Ben Lecheres. That if the owner of a slave knocks out the tooth of the eye of an Eved, so the Eved goes slave, goes, the Eved goes free. So Yisurin, Shemarkin Kagufa Shaladam, Yisurin that have an effect on the entire body of a person, Alach is Kama Vakama, imagine how liberating it is. So the Maral of Prague has a discussion about this, and Joseph Engel also says if there's a comparison being drawn here. So it sounds like the idea that the Torah has in Parshas Mishpatim, that an Eved goes free if he loses an eye or a tooth, you see that it's not a owner, it's not a knas per se on the bailam, on the odon, but rather it's some kind of a reduction in his ownership that then turns into a complete release. And the comparison to Yisurin apparently shows us that. And the Maral goes on to say that the idea is that we are very connected to our physicality, and Yisurin is what helps us be less connected to the physicality, and therefore gives a certain sense of freedom and a certain liberation. Which is a difficult idea. And then speaking of difficult ideas, so this next line of the Gemara is something that we are all experiencing right now very powerfully. So the Tanya of Shimon ben Yochai Omer Shlosh Matanos Tovos Nosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael V'kulan Le'nosan Ela Al Yedei Yisurin. That there are three gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, and they only are required through Yisurin. Eretz Yisrael, Yichsiv, Ki Kasher Yaser, Ishas Beno, Hashem Elokecha, Miyasrecha, Yichsiv Vasvigesh Elokecha, Miviachal Eretz Tova, Olam Haba, Ki Yichsiv, Ki Ner Mitzvah Tarorah, Vidarachayim Techaz Musa. So here you see that Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba, all are only acquired through Yisurin. And definitely Eretz Yisrael being acquired through Yisurin is something that we're very much witnessing once again. And at every door that seems to happen again and again, and here it's happening in a very intense fashion. And the Rosh Yeshiva of Goldwicht had a sicha about this, about the notion that even though there is a avtacha from the Avos that the Jewish people will have eternal ownership of Eretz Yisrael, but that's not the same thing as a kinyan. A kinyan is a personal acquisition. And Yisurin doesn't have to translate only as suffering, but it does mean a personal investment. It means the act of kinyan and the act of being invested and having that sense that it's not coming for free. So there's no question that this door is certainly seeing what that means, that it doesn't come for free and is being forced to make that kinyan in every sense of the word, in every possible aspect, to be made to really not just have it come as a Yerusha, but experience the price of every possible price. So the Gemara, going on to the top of Hay and the Bays here, goes on to say, Tani Tana Kameder Biochan Kolosik, Bitaru, Vidmilas Chasadin, the cover is Banov, Mochon, Kolobanosov. And that's another thing that we're witnessing happening in Eretz Yisrael in such a painful way. So many people are experiencing this. So much agony. People who are Osek, Betorah, and Gmilas Chasadim, and burying their sons. And the promises that there's a Mechila for everything. And the Gemara interprets Psukim for this. And the Gemara then goes on to discuss what exactly is the nature of this kapara. Is this called Yisurin Shalava, or is this not called Yisurin Shalava? And the Gemara talks about Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan would walk around with the bone of his tenth son, Din Grama da Asira Bir, and he would comfort people with this. Rashi says, Ze'etzim shel ben asiri shemeslo. This is the son of his, is the bone of his tenth son. And Rashi explains a very small part of the bone, pachos mikasora, so it shouldn't be metame. The Aruch writes there was a tooth. In the Unayim Lemishpat over here, he has a discussion whether that means that the obligation of kvura is connected to tuma or not. The Bali Musar explained that he was conveying that you see that even great people suffer tremendously, and that was a source of nechama for people to know that he went through it also. And the Gemara talks about people here who were suffering in various ways. Rav Chiya Barava, Chalish. Rav Chiya Barava was sick. Allah gave Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan came to visit him. Amalei Chaviven Alecha Yisurin. He says, so are Yisurin dear to you? Amalei Lohein V'lo Yischaran. He says, no, not them, and not the reward. I don't want either. So Amalei Havli Yadach. He says, give me your hand. Yai V'lo Yadei V'ukmei. He gave him his hand, and he was able to lift him up. And then Rabbi Yochanan Chalish. Rabbi Yochanan was sick. Alagav Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina came to see him. Amalei Chaviven Alecha Yisurin. He says, are your Yisurin dear to you? Amalei Lohein V'lo Yischaran. Not them, and not their schar. Amalei Havli Yadach. He said, give me your hand. Yai V'lo Yadei V'ukmei. He gave him his hand, and he lifted him up. So So Amai, Leikim Rabbi Yochanan and Afshei. So we saw that Rabbi Yochanan was the one, in the first case, was able to lift him up. So why can he lift himself up? So here's a crucial line. Amri, Ein Chavish Matir Atzmu Beis Asur. So you see that a person who is a prisoner is not able to release himself from prison. And this is a big yesod, which is a big psychological yesod, and a big practical yesod that comes up all the time. That sometimes, even just mentally, psychologically, people are locked in a box, in a certain way of thinking. And other people are able to point it out to them, but they can't find it themselves. You see this all the time. And that Ein Chavish Matir Atzmi Beis Asurin, that a person cannot get himself out of the box that they've put themselves in, and they needed someone else to point the way and to get them out. The next section here is also very important, so tomorrow let's try to get to that. But I have a question about tomorrow's schedule. So have a little bit of a